The phrase economic hitman, what is that?
Well, we economic hitmen have really been the ones who've built the first truly global empire in the history of the world, George. And we've done it primarily through cheating the developing world and our own U.S. taxpayers out of trillions of dollars, essentially funneling that money from organizations like the World Bank into the private sector, into the hands of some very rich people in this country and in other countries. And we do this in many different ways, but perhaps the most typical way that we do this is that we economic hitmen will identify a developing country that has resources we covet, for example, oil.
Okay.
And we'll go to that country and arrange for a huge loan from the World Bank and its affiliates. But most of the money from that loan never gets to the country. Instead, it goes to banks in San Francisco or Houston or New York or Chicago to pay companies that you've heard about, like the Bechtels and the Halliburtons and the Stonehenge.
We sure have.
Yeah. To pay these companies to build big infrastructure projects in the developing country. Now, these are projects like power plants and industrial parks and ports that primarily serve the very rich in those countries and leave the country with a huge debt, one that it can't repay. So at some point we go back to that country and we say, look, you know, you owe us a lot of money. You can't repay your debt. So give us a pound of flesh. Sell our oil companies your oil real cheaply, or provide land for military bases, or vote with us on the next critical UN vote, or something like that. In essence, we've used this method to create a world empire. It's been created largely, for the first time in history, an empire has been created largely without the military.
Now, are we creating a world empire, or are we creating stability?
Oh, we're not creating stability at all, as 9/11 proved. As the fact that every time we walk into an airport and have to go through that tremendous security system proves, as the fact that we've got many young men and women right now in Iraq and Afghanistan and still are not winning in those wars, we've done the opposite of create stability. It's a more dangerous world now than it was 30 years ago. And that's really why I wrote the book. I want stability. I want my daughter to grow up in a safe world, in a world that is truly compassionate, that truly reflects the American ideals. And when we create that world, when we try to foster for people around the world our ideal of government for the people, of the people, and by the people, then we'll have a stable world. But only then. All these stopgap measures of security forces and military is not going to create a stable world for us.
John, how long has this formula of economics been going on where they would go to these underdeveloped countries, plop these billions of dollars of loans on them, and then force them to basically give us some of your resources, your assets, and we'll look the other way?
Well, George, the process that we use that I've described is really about as old as history, but we've perfected it, and we've really perfected it since World War II. And I think I mentioned earlier that I believe it started innocently. The roots to this really go back to World War I. And if you look at World War I and the Depression and World War II, you see that my father and mother, for example, grew up in a very terrifying world, very unstable world, and as did my grandparents. It came through World War I, the Depression, and World War II. At the end of World War II, the decision was made to try to change this, to try to take more control, and organizations like the World Bank and the IMF and the other so-called Bretton Woods organizations were created at the end of World War II to help reconstruct the devastated parts of the world that were devastated by World War II, Europe and Asia particularly.
Sure.
Now, these organizations did a pretty good job at that, but they immediately became politicized because at that point we saw a new enemy on the horizon, a terrifying one, Russia, the Soviet Union. And, of course, they had nuclear weapons, as did we. So this was very terrifying. So as part of the process of reconstructing the world, these organizations like the World Bank also took upon their shoulders the task of proving to the world that our system, capitalism, was better than the Soviet system of communism. And so they immediately became politicized. And as time went on, that became more and more so. Part of becoming politicized meant promoting capitalism, which meant promoting U.S. corporations. So these organizations very quickly fell into that rut of really championing U.S. and other corporations. By the time détente came around, we'd already reached a point where we weren't so nearly so concerned with showing up to the Soviet Union as we were in just promoting our corporations. The system really became corrupted over the 50 plus years since World War II.
Okay, are other countries doing this too?
Yes, we're certainly not alone, but I would say we're really like the quarterback and the coach combined of this team. As a measuring stick, out of the 100 largest economies in the world, 51 of these are corporations, not countries, corporations, and 47 of those are U.S. corporations. So you can see we're really, we're the leader, we're the CEO, the quarterback, the coach.
Now, is this being done with the mandate of government, or are we talking about these globalists that exist throughout the world who have this power hang-up, who have this greed and money hang-up? Are they the ones who are controlling these purse strings through these banks and this design, this plan, and we'll get into it with you tonight, is designed to make them more powerful, more richer?
Yeah, that's really it, George. You really hit the nail on the head here. I mentioned that it's the first, it's several unique things about this empire. It's first truly global. One, was created primarily without the military, and the third unique characteristic is that there is no emperor, there's no king. Instead, we have what I call a corporatocracy, which is really it's three pillars, the heads of the big corporations, big banks, and government. And these people are constantly jumping back and forth between these. So at the very top, you can't even hardly make a distinction. You know, the people like under the Democratic regime, we had Robert McNamara, who was president of Ford Motor Company and then Secretary of Defense.
Yes.
Under Kennedy and Johnson. And
who freely admitted that our involvement with Vietnam after the fact was a disaster.
Right. And he became Secretary of Defense and then president of the World Bank. And today, of course, we've got people like Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice who jump back and forth between these various sectors. So at the top of this heap, the corporatocracy is made up of men and a few women who are in flux between, officially working for corporations and government and banks. And in fact, what they're doing in all of this is promoting the corporatocracy. And the real power and wealth of that corporatocracy rests within the corporations. But again, there's a very fine line, almost an invisible line, between the corporations and the government at the highest levels.